The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
Did you guys bring your A game today?
A game is here and ready to go.
We got the first string lined up, ready to go, right?
The what?
You guys are the first string. That's like an athletics
reference.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't have a second.
Well, there's that, right? You're like the first and only string. No pressure. Hey, Dr. Robert Chug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State with Aftermath Radio, where we talk about all things related to psychopathy. If you'd like to speak with us, please do call area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com, and as always, we direct you to the website, aftermathradio.org, where there's a whole bunch of really cool stuff there, but most importantly, we're there, right? If you click on the link in the lower left-hand corner, it says radio. All of our podcasts are archived there for your enjoyment, and actually, that is true this week.
You're not lying.
Except for Dr. Ricky's interview last week, which I would have had, but...
No, don't you dare.
No pointing fingers?
Who are you going to blame?
Me. I don't know. I'm just saying someone sitting over there somewhere.
Because he couldn't find it on my flash drive.
Yeah.
So he blames me.
I'll have that up this weekend. And cool. So I feel good that we're kind of up to date there. I was really feeling like a slacker. But now I don't.
Good for you.
So today's a good day. We have coming on the show Dr. Robert Hare.
It's a great day.
Yeah. Is it a great day already and that just makes it like a fabulous day, or is that making it a great day?
if we're talking in Aftermath Radio terminology.
It definitely adds a level of class to the show. Not that our other guests don't. I mean, they certainly do, right?
You might get yourself into something.
Yeah, I know. Paul will be calling up any minute now.
Wait a minute.
We have very classy guests on the show. It's just kind of neat because Dr. Hare's the guy who's associated with the psychopathy checklist and, you know, kind of putting psychopathy on the map originally. And so it's really an honor to have him on. So we're looking forward to that coming up in a little bit. I had a couple of things I wanted to talk about before that. And one of them was actually an email that I should have already pulled up here, but I don't.
Are you slacking again?
No, I think I'm just a little scattered. I think that's what's going on. Let's talk about you guys.
Oh, great.
So next, and that brings me to the point that next week we will be off the air for a week. But we're going to hear some radio gold from the Aftermath Radio Vault, right? So
we'll
still be here. It just won't be live. So you two are off. Tell us, everyone, where you're going and what you're doing there.
Well, we are going to the fabulous New York City, and it's for the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences annual conference, and both Chantal and I are actually presenting, so it's exciting but nerve-wracking at the same time.
It's a research conference, and typically grad students and researchers as well, we have these things. Usually they meet, depending on the organization, once a year, sometimes once every other year, but it's kind of a big event, and it's definitely a big deal for Gigi and Chantal to go because... it lets them kind of showcase their research and lets them meet people, right? And
get into PhD programs.
Maybe get into law school.
it's about disseminating the knowledge first and foremost, right? Whether or not it gets you a good contact into PhD school, that's secondary, right? But we're all very proud of you guys because you guys are going and you're presenting. Right. Whereas in the fall when we went to Washington, you guys were just sort of like the hangers-on, kind of like
you weren't proud of us then.
the guests that sort of arrive uninvited and it's like, well, okay.
Where's the free food? The free food. We paid for that food.
You guys got some free food. You went to that thing for Dr. Fardella, didn't you?
Weren't you there?
Yeah,
right.
The Ted Bundy car thing.
We were all there.
Well, actually, talk about opportunistic. We turned that into an Aftermath Radio event, right?
Look at us.
So I'm not one to talk. Here I am in my glass house throwing stones at you guys, right? So that's New York City, and you'll be there for how long?
10 days.
Yep.
10 days. And your presentation, I'm sorry, is how long?
9.5 days.
Your presentation is the last 9.5 days. Well, Gigi, you first. What are you presenting on?
I am presenting on conducting secondary data analysis of the 2009 National Crime Victimization Survey, the school crime supplement aspect of it, and looking at the different, focusing just specifically on female students between the 6th and 12th grades, and looking at the differences between four different forms of bullying, relational, physical, verbal, and cyber, and then also just looking at the frequency of victimization. And I'm still in the prelim stages, but it's going to be.
And this is your thesis too, right?
Yes, this is.
We should have had her practice on the show.
No,
in front of millions of with listeners worldwide. See,
no.
If you can do it on the show, then you'd have no problem doing it in front of a couple hundred people, right?
See, the cool thing about radio is I'm talking normally to you guys, and I'm forgetting that there's people listening.
Yeah, same here.
So you're also forgetting there's a mic in front of your face.
Right.
There you go. More people can hear you talking. Like, yeah, you're right. It's sort of like a conversation that we're having in one room, but like lots of people are listening in. Mm-hmm. Whereas that is all eyes are on you.
Exactly.
And,
so you have to do the whole part. Picture.
Interesting question. Would you?
That's what they always said.
That's like
helpful.
A Brady Bunch reference. I think in the 70s.
Always made me laugh.
Yeah.
It's not helpful to me at all.
Picture your audience in their underwear.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do that.
I don't know who came up with that.
I don't either.
What are you going to do yours on, Chantal?
I'm presenting on my thesis as well. I'm looking at the number of drug references in the songs, in the song lyrics of the millennium, and seeing how, and cross-referencing those essentially with Adam, which is the drug arrestee monitoring. They take urine samples of drug arrests.
Right, right.
And a few national surveys.
You're going to practice that one once or twice before you go to New York City, right?
We've already presented on these, essentially.
Oh, okay.
At WSC.
Good. Okay. Excellent. So we wish you all the best of luck. We look forward to when you come back telling us all about it.
Thank you.
The amazing people that you astounded with your research knowledge.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
And all the great people we meet.
All the great people. Yeah. Now, compared to ASC, and I've never been to ACJS, is it the same crowd or is it different?
It's a lot more practitioners.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, okay. All right.
Awesome.
What are they practicing for? Why don't they just do it, whatever it is?
God.
I know.
We need a drum roll.
Wait, we got a drum roll. Yeah.
All right, wait. Let me set it up. What are they practicing for? Why don't they just do it? No.
That's
the drum roll for the joke. That's the one.
Rim shot,
okay,
not
one more
drum
time.
Roll.
What are they practicing for? Why don't they just do it? Thank you. All right. I'll be here all week. Now, wanted to talk about Twitter.
Yes. No,
can we do the Twitter arrangement that I mentioned? You weren't even ready. You want to come back to Twitter?
No. Can't just switch.
Okay. Aftermath Radio Twitter update. Actually, we need the one with the lyrics.
Oh, okay.
Try one more time. Aftermath Radio Twitter update.
Maybe it was too early.
That's excellent. No, I like that. It kind of crossfade, like a DJ, right? So I get emails every time people start following us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been getting emails. People are following the show. Now, are we able to like look at our Twitter page and know exactly how many people are? And by the way, did you tweet the show already? Because we have to do that.
We've tweeted all weekend, but yes, we will tweet right now.
And again, this computer is locked, so I can't get into it.
Oh, fantastic.
So is this one.
She's handing you that computer right there. That looks somewhat awkward. Okay, so people are kind of climbing on board the Twitter train, and we like that. And I guess you guys are going to Twitter, what, once every hour throughout
the
week? You're going to tweet once per hour?
I'm trying to help you.
Thank you. I sound like that old guy, right, who doesn't understand the lingo, right? Okay, so
yes,
got some Twitter activity. I'm happy about that. I have an email from a listener, so Aftermath Radio Q&A. Email version.
Okay, let's see if I can get this right.
You got mail.
Okay, excellent. So this was an email that I got from an unnamed person from an undisclosed location outside of the United States. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because I don't want to divulge anything necessarily personal. But it says, "Hi, Dr. Shug. This is actually for you too. Seriously, it says, "Hi, Dr. Shug. I love the radio show. You guys work so hard. Thank you and the team so much for helping to educate us all about psychopaths." So there you go.
Thanks.
Thank you.
You thought nobody noticed, right?
Nobody noticed.
They're noticing. So actually, there's quite a bit here. Basically, she talks about having two children with a psychopath and court-ordered weekends. And so it sounds like sort of a custody issue. I want to actually see if I can get her to come on the show. But the point that there are folks in all parts of the world who are kind of going through this. I know it sounds sort of vague and evasive, but I don't know how. I didn't actually check to see if I could read this on the air, and so I don't want to necessarily, disclose anything I shouldn't. So there's that.
Thank you for the email.
Thank you, listener, in undisclosed location for the email, and we hope to hear more from you. Let's see. You know what? This was an interesting email. This is not an Aftermath Radio Q&A, but you can play it anyway because it is an email.
You've got mail.
I'm just going to do that.
All right. So I don't know if you guys got this one. Dear K Beach staff and volunteers, regretfully, we had a theft at K Beach last evening. This was a deliberate act of an individual who we now believe planned this act. One of our students was affected in that it was his personal laptop computer. This is a very unfortunate incident. However, it's a stark reminder that we are a station that is on a very transient campus in a major urban area. We must be observant and take precautions to protect each other and our respective belongings. So it goes on and on, but essentially somebody here got their laptop stolen by, I guess, some dude who walked in here that they let him in.
And, why are you assuming it's a dude?
I'm reading. I'm hoping to find something.
Fail.
It says he grabbed the laptop and ran. Okay, yeah, boy, I don't want to be accused of being sexist, right? it's sort of surprising that, you know, but this stuff, I mean, can you imagine losing your laptop to theft? Like, my whole life is online.
I would cry a lot.
Yeah, there's nothing. Well, that's why I use.
Who's going to write my thesis?
I don't know. Sure won't be you, right?
No, I will not rewrite it. I will change the topic or something.
How often do you guys back up your data?
On an external hard drive?
Yeah. Seriously. I don't think I do. Yeah, I don't think that's about how often I do it. I don't think that's enough.
I don't think that's enough either.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, on a show about psychopaths, and I think it was around the same day we were broadcasting, maybe the day after, I don't know, like we have someone come in and steal something. Now, was this guy a psychopath? Who knows? You know, maybe he had a family of five to feed and he, you know, I mean, we can go into different. Were you going to say something, G?
No, I'm just scratching my head.
Okay. She's like, she's trying to figure out the answer. Like, yeah, why did he do it? Or maybe he is a jerk or so. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah. So you're not safe anywhere. It just goes to show you. So be paranoid and trust no one.
Be paranoid and trust no one. Just need to be vigilant.
Are you a paranoid parent?
I am. I was raised by paranoid parents.
Me too.
And my parents might be listening, but that's okay. They need to know that they're paranoid. Or concerned, I guess. Maybe overly protective is the word. Mm. Is there a difference between overly protective and paranoid?
Yes.
You've mentioned that your parents were that way, right?
Oh, they are. They don't cross that thin line.
Yeah.
They have jumped way past it.
So they're paranoid.
Yeah. And I say it to them all the time.
Right. Now, to me, paranoid means like cautious to the point where it's unrealistic, you know what I mean? And there's not necessarily proof to what it is, whatever it is that you're thinking is attacking you or harassing you or conspiring against you or whatnot. So I don't know if I'm that bad, but I know that I do tend to think the worst case situation and react or behave according to that. So, and even amongst my peers and sort of family members, I do hear that. Yeah, you're a little overly protective, but I always say, look at the results. You know, my son's 14 and he's a really good kid, and so, you know,
okay.
maybe paranoia works. I mean, look at you, right?
Mm.
No, not so much. Bad example.
But I mean, I also went to the complete other side for a while there, just to rebel.
The dark side of the force.
Dark side.
Wow.
Yeah, same here.
Did you really, Gigi?
Is that so hard to believe?
More believable for me.
What are you trying to say?
I needed to do a better background check on you too, I think. Wow, I feel so vulnerable.
It's called being a teenager.
Yeah, he's a fresh teenager.
You're right. Yeah, 14 is different from 18.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's plenty of time. But knock on wood.
Yes, knock
you know,
on wood.
I did everything I was supposed to do. So we're running a little bit different of a format. Oh, you're spinning? Like you wanted to wrap up? 2 minutes?
I'm spinning and telling you 2 minutes at the same time.
Gotcha.
I think, let's see, what else did I want to talk about in terms of psychopathy? With that, the Twitter, have we gotten any tweets?
We haven't, no, but this is rant. Sorry,
go for it.
I was going to say, this is not necessarily psychopathy related, but James Q. Wilson died last week.
Did he really? The criminologist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. What did he die of?
I think he got checked into the hospital for pneumonia.
Oh, my gosh.
Did I read somewhere where it said he had complications from leukemia?
Oh, leukemia, not pneumonia.
Okay.
No, that's like, he was the broken windows guy, right?
Yeah.
One of the broken windows guys? Famous criminological theory where in a particular neighborhood, the idea is if there's one broken window, that will lead to more broken windows and more crime because it kind of shows the criminals that the residents don't care. I wholeheartedly subscribe to that theory because I feel like I see it all the time. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You guys don't believe in it?
After being in policy and I don't know, I just...
I related me maybe more so, more of a modern reference to like maybe graffiti. You know what I mean? I mean, the broken window, okay, but like graffiti, once the graffiti starts, if it's not cleaned up right away, you see more graffiti, and that just means more people hanging around that are doing the graffiti, and usually those guys, you know, aren't the guys you want to be bringing home to meet mom for dinner, right?
Yeah. It's just so funny the differences in the way that our faculty even looks at something as simple as a theory like that.
Yeah. Know? So
that's how we learn.
Conservative.
Am I in the minority
divide
here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the conservative view is following Wilson's broken windows, or?
Yes.
And the liberals?
The opposite. Liberal
say no, that's a bunch of...
Hoo-ha.
Hoo-ha. Boy, G's going to sprain her elbow if she keeps doing that wrap it up thing. All right, you want to go to break?
Yes.
Okay, Aftermath Radio, we will be right back. Hopefully with Dr. Robert Hare.
Yes.
Right after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shug Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
All right, we're back. Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Chug, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you'd like to speak with us, phone number is area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us and chat with Chant at aftermath.radio. You may email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com. And as always, go to our website, aftermathradio.org, where all our podcasts are archived for you to listen to whenever you'd like. Like you could listen to tonight. Maybe. Gigi.
Yes.
Or tomorrow.
That's number one on
my list. Or maybe
when
you guys are in New York City.
Oh, yeah. Because we'll be having aftermath withdrawals.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, we're still waiting for Dr. Hare to phone in. But in the meantime, Chant, you have that. Now, what is the headline to that story, and where is it from? He asks.
It is... HuffPost Books, and it says the internet newspaper, news blogs, video community.
Okay. And what's the headline?
Psychology Books, 5 Ways to Spot the Psychopath in Your Life. And it seems like he lists 5 of probably the most popular, if not the most popular, books on psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, the first one being Without Conscious by Dr. Robert Hare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what he lists in the beginning is, he says, 1 out of every 10 Wall Street employees is a clinical psychopath.
Right, and that was the point I wanted to sort of bring up. And that was this writer that said that?
Because it says that it was in the CFA Institute reported that in their latest magazine.
Okay, so, and I don't know who wrote that CFA. And what is CFA, by the way?
An Investment and Financial Analysis Organization.
Okay, so here's the thing. So that comes out, and I don't know who wrote that, or I don't know if Paul or Bob here consulted with that. But the 10% figure seems a little high. Now, we've had Paul Babiak on, who's talked about his work, and they put it at about 4%, right?
For Wall Street employees or for...
Well, it was, remember, it was executives from corporations across the United States, I believe was the sample, right? So this 10% figure, this 1 in 10, I don't know that on Wall Street, I don't know that anyone has necessarily come up with scientific evidence to support that. Now, I'm not saying it's not true. I mean, and just kind of intuitively, you think about, like, given the situation with Wall Street and you know, the problems we had, like, yeah, that would make sense. And why isn't it more? You know what I mean? Like, but it's interesting how they put that figure and then they put Dr. Hare's book, Without Conscience, a big old picture of it, which sort of implies that he said that.
Right. I mean, they put five other books, but yes.
Right.
That is one of them.
And not to put words in Dr. Hare's mouth, but I don't believe he did say that. So it's kind of a misrepresentation. It sounds like the 10% figure came from the CFA report, whoever they are and whoever wrote that, and who knows where they got their information, you know, and how they got it. And it just kind of the point, I think, to bring that up now is that, you know, this the information and the misinformation that seems to be so easily spread nowadays, especially because of the internet and kind of the availability of this stuff and the ease of access to it. You know, that's how this stuff happens. And then so now what ends up happening from here is folks see that figure and then they see Dr. Hare's book and they say, oh, well, Dr. Hare said that. And then this whole 10%. And by the way, the phone's ringing right now. Go ahead and see if you can get him on and I'll keep talking. But that's the way.
The cookie crumbles.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. That's right.
It's okay. We'll get you on the air right
now. So, yes. So would you like to know the other books?
What's that?
Would you like to know?
No, I think actually Dr. Hare just called in.
Oh, yes. Lovely.
Is it on?
Yes, it should be.
Dr. Robert Hare, are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. Thank you for calling, sir. I'm going to introduce you. I actually have like a 3-page introduction from your website.
Do the synopsis.
So this is Dr. Robert Hare. He's Emeritus Professor of Psychology at the University of British Columbia, where he's taught and conducted research for more than 4 decades. President of Darkstone Research Group, which is a forensic research and consulting firm, devoted most of his academic career to the investigation of psychopathy, its nature, assessment, and implications for mental health and criminal justice. He's written several books, Without Conscience, which is a big one. He's the developer of the psychopathy checklist and its various versions. He's sort of collaborated on. He consults with law enforcement, including the FBI, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Dr. Hare is the guru of psychopathy. I think that's the best way to sum it up, right?
I've been around a long time.
Well, your name it really has become synonymous, I think, with not necessarily with psychopathy, but certainly the assessment of it, right? In some respects?
I think in some respects. And I think it's probably fair to say. So I started out a long, long time ago, and I was looking at the web of science. Tells you the number of publications on a topic per year.
Right.
And I did some checking the other day, and you know, you go back into the 70s, and right up until the 70s and 80s, there would be maybe 10 or 15 papers published on psychopathy per year. And my group and I were doing half of them.
Yeah.
But and of course, a lot of the people that started out doing research, it'd be one or two studies, and they'd do something else. And I don't know why I stuck at it, but I did.
Well, that was a question I wanted to ask you. Is it okay if we call you Bob?
Please do.
Okay. What got you, and I kind of know the story anyway, but it's such a fascinating story. What got you started on this? Why you even took this on?
Well, you know, it was chance and circumstance. In fact, that's the name of a short article I wrote for a British journal. They said, why did I get that started? Was there something about me I wanted to find out? And that I have some traumatic events in my life? And the answer to all those things is no. It was just chance. My wife and I had met at the University of Alberta many, many years ago. She's still my best friend, mm-hmm. and wife, of course. And we met in the back row of a course in abnormal psychology, actually. And we got married not that long after, and I was finishing my master's degree, and she was finishing a bachelor's degree. We had a daughter, Cheryl, and who had some medical problems right at the very beginning. I went down to the United States to work on a PhD in experimental psychology, mm-hmm. nothing to do with how I ended up. But Cheryl had problems, medical bills piled up. We had no insurance, so we had to come back to Canada at the end of the first term, which was in December. And I had to get a job, and the only job I could find at that time, for some reason or other, was as the psychologist at a major prison, a maximum security prison penitentiary near Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Took that job. I was there for about 8 months. Only psychologist in the prison. I didn't know what to do. I read books. I wasn't a clinician. And I met all these people that kind of manipulated me and conned me, and I suppose frightened me in many respects as well. But I didn't think too much about going into this area because there was no area to go into. I mean, even forensic psychology wasn't a discipline in those days.
Yeah.
And I went on, did my PhD in experimental psychology, and my first job offer was out here at the University of British Columbia, close to the old penitentiary. And I was interested in the effects of punishment on human behavior. And I thought, well, hold it. You know, people are talking about how, you're highly anxious. In those days, the Taylor Manifest Anxiety Scale was popular. So everybody was interested in how anxious people learn to avoid punishment.
Right.
And I thought, well, what about the other end of the spectrum? And I read Cleckley and David Licken's published study in 1957. And I thought, well, maybe I'll try that. Went to the old penitentiary, had a lot of friends out there still. Not inmates so much, but people on staff. And that was it. Never stopped after that.
Right. So, it was really sort of more out of practical life decisions that you ended up there rather than, like they say, the deep sort of soul searching.
That's right. I had no intentions whatsoever to this kind of research. I was interested. But you have to remember that I'm not a clinician. I'm an experimental psychologist. So I don't lay on the hands, and I don't even use my own instrument. I let qualified people do that.
Mm-hmm.
But all I wanted was something that would allow me to facilitate the research we were trying to do. Now, I had some good graduate students in the early days, and we had access to several institutions in the Lower Mainland near Vancouver, and we did we published quite a few articles in those days, but we had these continual battles with the reviewers and the editors on what we meant by psychopathy. And I say, well, we got to read Cleckley and Arrietty and a lot of the old clinicians, and they say, well, that's not enough. So one day I just sat down and said, well, okay, let's make operationalize this, make it, grab it a working definition. And we came up with a list of items that turned out to be the psychopathy checklist eventually.
Right.
That was it.
So in his time, they really needed something to measure with. There was no measurement.
Nothing.
Right.
No, there was nothing. Well, in my clinical opinion, that's what people would say. That's not enough. You can't write a journal article and say, well, psychiatrists said in their clinical opinion.
Exactly.
And self-report inventories, personality tests such as the MMPI and other instruments, the Rorschach,
eight-plot
tests. People were using these things, and I finally, in 1985, decided to have a close look at all of this and published a paper showing that even though people were using the same terms, if they used different methodologies, they were measuring different things.
Right.
And so at least what the PCLR did was to bring some sort of order into a field that was really pretty messed up.
Right.
And it's not that I did something wonderful. It's just that nobody else was interested in doing that at the time, so I did it. Well, I and my students, I had many good students and colleagues, so.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll come back to the psychopathy checklist. I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about, because you seem to be involved in so many different things related to psychopathy, and over the years, I think one thing that you've done a really good job at is spreading the word about psychopathy. Can you speak a little bit about that, some of the different things you've been into and all over the world, too?
Well, it's funny, for a long time, I didn't really talk about it publicly. You know, I was doing my research, and I'd be sort of cloistered in my lab with my students, and we'd publish articles. But every now and then, a newspaper would get a hold of one of the papers we'd published, and they'd say, well, what are the implications for the real world? And, of course, then as soon as the psychopathy checklist came out, the PCLR came out, then people in the criminal justice system started to say, well, if what we say about psychopathy is true, that is, if there's a constellation of traits and behaviors here that's fairly stable over time, then one should be able to make certain predictions about their behavior. And that's how we started to do research on parole and reoffending. We published a paper in I think, I don't know, the early 80s, mm-hmm. on predicting parole outcome, and it turned out to be very successful. So because of that, people became interested in it, but the public actually still, I think, does not have a good grasp of what psychopathy is and what the implications are. If you're a victim, of course, you understand.
Right.
But for most other people, it's very difficult. And, you know, I go back periodically and look at my old newspaper clippings from 30, 40 years ago, and you know that the reporters are asking the same questions that they asked then. They're asking them now, the same ones that were asked 30, 40 years ago. And so it seems as if we're not really getting ahead. We have a movie that'll come out. It'll be on, say, autism, or what's the movie with... anyways, okay. We'll have The Beautiful Mind on Schizophrenia.
Right, right.
And we have one on autism where...
yeah, was it The Little Boy? I think I know the one you're talking about.
No, it was... who's the guy that's playing in this new series called Luck? Oh, he's a terrific actor.
Oh.
Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, there you go.
And I guess it was with who else was in that? Anyways, I don't remember all these movies. But anyways, so people get it. They understand that there are certain people. We have 1,000 movies on psychopaths, and half the programs that come out on television involve a psychopath, one form or another. We have Dexter, and everybody
right.
loves
Dexter. Yeah, I was going to say Dexter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we still don't get it. It's as if somehow the thoughts are not connected, and for that, I'm really perplexed.
Yeah. Yeah, because it seems like it would be... I don't know if it's easier, but it's just trying to convince other researchers of your thoughts and ideas about psychopathy is much different than trying to sort of sell the public on the message.
Well, and trying to sell the public is difficult in a way, because we have the public, but also we have the people who are purveyors of information to the public.
Yes.
The newspapers and magazines who often get it wrong. And one of the current issues right now is something that came out on the Huffington Post, saying that I had said that 10% of people working in the financial sector were psychopaths.
Right. Actually, Bob, we were just talking about this on the air before you came on, so I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Well, I said nothing of the sort.
Right.
but I've been getting calls and emails from all sorts of people now saying, well, you said this, and it's been reported, but I didn't say anything of the sort.
And they sort of plastered a nice big picture of the cover of Without Conscience right there, too, just to sort of...
I did appreciate that.
Well, we've had Paul Babiak on, and he's talked about his work and discussing, you know, amongst the executives, the data suggesting around 4% in his sample.
Well, yeah, but you have to understand that, and you understand, but your audience must understand that this is not a random sample. It was not representative of executives. This was a sample... almost of convenience. Paul was called in to do evaluations for executives in 7 different companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, and about 4% had scores high enough to be considered to be psychopathic for a research project. So, I mean, that would be 30 out of 40 on the PCLR.
Right.
Which was really quite surprising, about 4%, and we think maybe about 1% of the general population. So that 4% has been taken now, and it's been extrapolated to executives or CEOs or managers or people in the financial world generally, and yet it was only one sample.
Right.
And we have no idea at all what it would be in some companies that value some of these psychopathic traits.
Sure, sure. So it might be more, might be less, but there's just the data hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, and it would depend. Yeah, depend on the context. Everything seems to be related to context, I think, and they have to do with the aspirations, the goals, the philosophy of the corporation. It might value, you know, beating people hard over the head just to make an extra dollar, or it might be a company that is extremely ethical,
sure,
conscientious. So the base rate could be higher or lower than 1 or 2% or 3%.
Right, right. Speaking of the media, then, have you found over the years that the media is sort of over anxious or over willing to use the, you know, the legitimate data that you come up with, maybe to further some sort of maybe to put it another way, do they often get it wrong like this?
I think mostly. There are a few really good programs that I think did a good job. CNN did one many years ago called CNN Presents. It was an hour documentary. And that's when we actually started to do the first brain imaging study of psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
We had no real data, but they wanted to talk about it. Now we've got people like you who are collecting all sorts of data on imaging, so we have a pretty good handle on what's going on. But in those days, they had to take a chance. So a few others, like BBC Horizon and Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, they have done some good jobs. But mostly, people come in have an agenda of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask them, why are you doing this, and what are you trying to get out of it? And quite often, the story I get is not what we end up with. An example is something that appeared on National Public Radio, NPR. And it had to do with it's not too long ago, 7 or 8 months ago, had to do with parole of people serving life sentences
mm-hmm.
in the United States, particularly in California. And they didn't tell me that this is what they were interested in, but when the program came out, it appeared that they were trying to say that lifers had no chance of ever getting out on parole if they had a high score in the PCLR. So the story now is PCLR keeps these guys in prison forever.
Mm.
Like, I get letters from some of these offenders.
You get letters from them?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And they're saying that, you know, your instance is being used and it's keeping me in prison forever. Well, I was pretty upset by the program, as were other people, and particularly in the Department of Corrections in California, because the people who do assessments on the lifers said, well, we don't only look at the PCLR. We look at all sorts of other risk factors, their behavior patterns, and so forth. But it was made to look as if the PCLR was the only instrument that was used to make decisions. Of course, that's silly. So there's been a lot of misinformation put out by the general public, and I don't have a blog on my webpage. I should get one.
I was going to say, if anyone needs a blog, Bob, it would be you, I think.
But then I have to write something every day. That would be pretty hard. But you know, generally, things have not worked out that well with the media because they're looking for the sensationalistic aspects. There was one called I am a psychopath.
Yeah, right.
And that was put up by a reputable Australian. And then this the later one, Fishhead, was kind of interesting as well, except that the producer, who is a psychiatrist and a filmmaker, whom I know, Misha Vatruba, threw other stuff in as well about the effect of depressants or antidepressants on the population. And I said, well, you've got to chop it into two. You've got two things there.
Yeah, it seemed I remember talking to Paul about that, and it seemed like he had some mixed messages he was sending, and it was kind of, what do you call it, kind of mixing the pot up a little bit.
Well, yes, and I think it ended up by confusing people. The first part on psychopathy was pretty good.
Yeah.
But then you start getting into something else, and quite often, this wasn't Mishy's intent. He's a really good, reputable guy, a former psychiatrist who went into filmmaking, but a lot of others are doing that sort of thing, where they will start out trying to say, this is our message, but before you're finished, it's all garbled.
Right.
So my experiences have been okay with the media, but I'm very, very almost gun-shy in a respect, and I have to be very careful.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah.
Actually, Paul just emailed in about the Huffington Post article.
Yeah.
So he listens with his wife sometimes over dinner.
you, Paul.
So I was gonna. We have about maybe 4 minutes left here. I just kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about maybe turning toward the survivors of these relationships. And do you often get letters from victims?
Oh yes. Over the years, I've had many hundreds, and some of them are very, very detailed. I mean, they're 15, 20, 30 pages, and extremely poignant. And there's been very little that I can do because there hasn't been an outlet for this sort of thing. I can't set up a blog and start giving advice.
Right.
Researcher, I'm not a clinician, but somebody had to do it. So I'm glad that Aftermath has actually taken up that job. Yes, and I have I have so many case histories with permission from most of the people to use the material one way or another that we did put together. A colleague of mine and I started to put together a book on psychopathy through the eyes of the victim. and we've got it about half done, but it's hard to get a publisher interested in this sort of thing.
Oh, that's
why I don't know.
Yeah, it's unusual.
Yeah, we were trying to. We'd have themes, and we would use some actual case material disguised with permission and so forth as a platform to explain to people out there that this is a serious problem, and we get all this research about psychopaths, and the victims are left actually in the wake. They really get no satisfaction.
Right.
And it's so frustrating for them, as well as you know, and as your listeners know, because it's hard to convince other people that you're not the problem.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, I know in Without Conscience, which is a book I highly recommend to everyone. Most, actually, you'd be surprised at how many people come to me having read this already. But you've mentioned, you know, the sort of the survival guide. You put that in there. And I always refer folks that come to me to this book because that really you put it together very nicely, very practical considerations to make when you're dealing with a psychopath. And I know, hear you say at one point that Without Conscience is they're going to re-release it, or you're editing it again, or
I'm well, of course, my publisher wouldn't want people to know this.
Oh, but
then they wouldn't buy the current version. No, but I have been asked. I haven't really got onto it yet. It'll be a long time, but I have been asked to update it because a lot has happened in the years that you know that this thing has been out, but rewriting it or updating it is really, really hard.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
There's so much good material in there that, I mean, writing the book was hard because I was asked to write it by the senior editor at Penguin Pocketbooks at the time. And when I wrote, I spent a year writing it, and I sent it in, and she sent back and said, well, you know, it's interesting, scientific, and boring. You know, do a pop psych rewrite. So I spent another year rewriting it in a style that I came to sort of enjoy. And after it came out, it was hard for me not to use that style of writing scientific articles. And they'd say, Bob, rewrite the article, because it's, you know, you don't want a pop psych article.
Right.
So eventually I will put in an update or maybe, you know, addenda or something like that.
Sure, sure. I just actually got an email from Dr. Jill Rickey who says, tell Bob that the victims that have written to him probably had a cathartic healing in those 30 pages. So there you go.
Be interesting. It could be. But you know what surprised me most was that the range of professions, occupations, the variety of people who would write in. And
yeah.
It was all over the place. Some cases it would be somebody who was a senior administrator for an entire city. And something would happen and who ends up out on the street? The victim.
Yeah.
Which is not, you know, not unusual, as you know.
Yeah. Well, we got about a minute left, Bob. Anything that you're working on now that you're really excited about that you wanted to plug on the show?
Quite a bit of stuff, actually. Yes, I'm collaborating with some people on imaging, but I think you and your colleagues are doing most of that work now. And you're doing it in a way that I couldn't. I mean, I don't have the facilities to do it anymore. So the imaging stuff is interesting. I'm writing some commentaries on how it can be used for issues of culpability and responsibility. And one of the things I think, I may disagree with you and your colleagues to a certain extent on this, I think that I'm not sure that what we find, these anomalies that we find are really indicate some sort of deficit or damage. I have an open mind in that.
Right, right. I feel the same.
Yeah. I think that these are differences, and these differences have to be investigated. For example, we don't know what would happen if we went to the general population, did a random sample of you know, tens of thousands of people. How many people would have these anomalies and are leading perfectly normal lives?
Exactly.
It's kind of a standard thing. So we don't know what cause and effect is. And that's the problem. We'll study people who are psychopathic according to clinical criteria. They show a particular anomaly, and we draw some sort of causal connection between them. We're working... Paul Babiak is part of a team that we have together that's looking at corporate psychopathy. We're gathering quite a bit of empirical data on that now. And also how psychopathy plays out in society generally rather than in a prison context. So I'm pretty excited about that. And what else are we doing now? Looking at developmental aspects of psychopathy. As you know, people have now tied it into the early appearance of callous, unemotional traits.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we have to make sure that we don't make the assumption that, in fact, these are early indicants of psychopathy. They're behaviors that may or may not turn into something.
That's another Pandora's box, isn't it?
Yep, it is.
Yeah.
And, in fact, there are lots of Pandora's boxes. And I'll let you open them.
All right. Well, we've run out of time. It's been an honor, Bob, having you on the show.
Oh,
we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
And best of luck with everything you have going on.
Okay, good. Thanks.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go, Dr. Robert Hare.
Wow. I should turn on my mic.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Shell-shocked?
Yeah.
I feel like a little shell-shocked, yeah.
Starstruck.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. And Bob Hare is like the rock star in my world, you know what I mean? So, like the Justin Bieber in your world.
Stop. I don't even like him.
All right, we got to get out of here. The next show's coming up. Next week, we're going to take the week off while the girls are in New York City. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm not sure who's going to be on yet. I'll figure something cool out to have on. In the meantime, please do leave us your voicemails at 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us, aftermath.radio. Leave messages there. Email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com and go to the website. Lots of good stuff at the Aftermath Foundation website in general in terms of resources for survivors. Among them is the Aftermath Radio podcasts. And they'll have those updated by the weekend. So,
do you want...
There you go.
The disclaimer before we head out.
Yeah, let's hear the disclaimer.
I hope this is the right one. The old one.
Though you cannot make a conclusive diagnosis of psychopathy without adequate interview and file information, several of the behaviors reported in this case seem broadly consistent with traits and characteristics commonly associated with psychopathy. None of the comments made here should be interpreted as a formal diagnosis based on an appropriate psychopathy assessment.
That Paul Babiak's got a career in radio. If that psychology thing that doesn't work out.
Oh, God.
All right, everybody. We will see you in 2 weeks. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Aftermath Radio here on KBeach.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the KBeach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode.
If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.